Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervey, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey & Wynn. And today, as usual, I'm here to be the managing partner of your life, and managing your life with me is Lawrence Avon.
Hello again, Alan.
Hello again.
I don't know if I'm doing any of the managing here.
You are doing managing. You're managing well, very well. And we've got a great show today I'm excited about. Before we get to our really wonderful guest, because you're in for a treat. Anyone who is in the car driving or listening at home, you really want to hear what our guest has to say. He's prophetic. He's passionate. He's aggressive. And above all, he's a huge, huge success story, and we're going to talk about that in a second. Before we do, though, a friend of the show, Reggie Bush, and that is consistent with our guest today, and I'm not giving away. Lauren, I know you're looking at me like, who is this? We're talking a little bit of sports, not all sports, but Reggie
Bush. Well, I know who Reggie Bush is.
I know you do. Former running back with the New Orleans Saints, and of course, a legend at USC, and also someone who has not escaped scandal. Reggie Bush has a project come out. It's a documentary, and it's going to provide a new, fresh look at the USC college football scandal. Reggie Bush gets a chance to tell his side of the story. The documentary is from Believe Entertainment Group, and they're the studio behind the Oscar-winning Dear Basketball. The documentary is going to provide Reggie Bush with the opportunity to tell his story in his words, and importantly, reclaim the legacy of the accomplishments that he deserves. His career at USC was marred by allegations that he and his family improperly received nearly $300,000 worth of gifts while he was a student. And as a penalty, he returned his Heisman Trophy, and his records were, at least USC returned the Heisman Trophy, and his records were erased from the NCAA record books. Mm-hmm. I understand Reggie Bush will be coming on our show to talk about this. It's a fascinating documentary. We're looking forward to it. So that's my plug for the documentary coming out on Reggie Bush.
And what's it called again?
I don't know that it has a name yet.
Oh, okay.
It's a great, we're going to ask Reggie what it's called, but it's from Believe Entertainment Group. So it's going to be something very interesting. I want to get it out there so people know to watch for it. And our guest, hey, now I'm going to get to, you know, the real meat and potatoes today, mm-hmm. because our guest, I'm sure, has had a lot of experience with scandals with athletes. He is an attorney for the athletes. He is well-known, well-respected, well-loved, that's for sure. He has represented so many people, currently representing Deshaun Watson, and we're going to talk about that. But he's also represented people like Roger Clemens, Adrian Peterson, one of my favorite all-time football players, Adrian Peterson. He's represented other athletes, and including Harden. I lost track for a second, but there's Warren Moon, who played in the Canadian Football League, so, and for the Minnesota Vikings, Michael Bennett, James Harden, Calvin Murphy, Wade Boggs, Scottie Pippen, Steve Francis, Rudy Tomjanovich, and a host of others. He's also represented Rice University, Dow Jones, dozens of Houston area politicians. He's represented the estate of the late husband of Anna Nicole Smith, J. Howard Marshall, Victoria Osteen, the wife of Pastor Joel Osteen. Wow. It's just the list
who's
is
who.
Who's who.
Famous.
And he's won just about every case. He started out as a prosecutor, about 15 years as a prosecutor, put dozens of killers behind bars, and he has gone on to start, founded his own firm called Rusty Harden and Associates. He's been known for dramatic courtroom experiences. He's been called one of the greatest attorneys in Texas and in this country, and has been said that every wrongdoer in town wants him on his side. I'm not sure if it's all wrongdoers. Being a plaintiff's attorney myself, we don't want to call them wrongdoers, because a lot of them are accused falsely, including probably Deshaun Watson. But we want to welcome Rusty Harden to Gervey's Law right now. Welcome, Rusty.
Thank you very much.
How was that
for an interview? I don't recognize the guy you're talking about, but I do recognize a lot of the names you're using.
I was going to say, how was that for an introduction? I know when we introduced Alan Dershowitz, he said that he was going to play the introduction over and over again at 8 o'clock in the morning before he starts work so that he can get pumped up. You don't need to get pumped up. I'll tell you, there are so many sound bites. If people go to the internet and hear things, I heard you say in a clip that your parents are up there and I want them to know that I still recognize where I come from and who is responsible for my success. What a beautiful sentiment.
Well, it's true. You know, the thing is, when I started having some success financially and started using a car service to go to the airport and stuff like that, I was always embarrassed that somebody I knew would see me. And so, because I figured if my parents knew I was using a car service and wasn't driving myself, it'd be a long day. So I think it's important for all of us to remember that we've just been lucky in a lot of ways, and we travel this route, and sometimes things work out for us, sometimes they don't. But if we ever take ourselves too seriously, we're going to be in a bunch of trouble one day.
You know, Rusty, when you think about it, what do you think your parents would be most proud of you? Because a lot of us, you know, when our parents are gone, they may not see all of the success, some of the success, but what would they be most proud when they think about what you've accomplished?
Well, you know, my wife and I have two sons that do public service. One's a police officer, one's a school teacher. I like to think that they would, one of the things they'd be proudest of is their grandchildren. Mm. You know,
I think, look,
a lot of what we do, those of us who choose a public role, just kind of always remember, never for the grace of God go a lot of people. And so I think they would hope that. I would remember two parents that neither one of them graduated from high school, much less college. And they came of that generation that they led their whole life to try to make their kids' lives better than theirs were. And that's sometimes forgotten today. But so I would hope they would think, hey, listen, Rusty, if you think you're really a big freaking deal, then you know, you need to, we did something wrong. So
yeah. Wow.
That's,
you know, that is an answer that really hits me in the heart, because we've had so many people, we've interviewed so many preeminent attorneys. A lot of them will talk about a case that they were successful in, or they'll talk about representing a certain person or any political issue. But what you just said is so important, and I hope people listen and take it to heart, because that's really what is important in life. And you hit it on the head. You've been so successful, yet you can still see what's important, and that is the children and producing kids with great values, their grandchildren, what you've done, what you have provided for this world is something more than just law.
Well, I hope so. I mean, because look, so much of it's happenstance. Sometimes I think most people that have been lucky enough to have some degree of success, if they're honest, will admit a lot of their success depended upon being at the right place at the right time. There were right things going on. You know, there are all types of movements and social issues that come along that push them or whatever issue they have to the fore. I just think it's important for us to remember that it's not always about us. I met, you know, one of my heroes in life was John Wooden.
Yeah.
And back in 2002, I got a call from a friend who was Arthur Anderson that I was representing at the time. He said, hey, how would you like to go to the Final Four in Atlanta and spend the evening with John Wooden? It remains to this day one of the greatest events of my life. And I asked him, I said, hey, coach, do you think you could still coach today? You know, with the changing mores and attitudes and the players becoming the bigger deal than the coaches and all that. And he goes, yes. I said, well, why do you say that? He says, because everybody wants to be respected. Mm. And he said, you know, the thing that always amazed me was we talk about treating everybody the same, but everybody's different. So if everybody's different, why would you all treat them always the same? You would deal with them, their particular needs, their background, and so on, and what they need in order to be able to accomplish. So that guy was the most incredible man. He was 92 that night that I spent that evening.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And he looked 75. His mind was 55. He had a hip problem when he walked, but otherwise, he might as well have been a 55-year-old man. And I never forgot that everybody wants to be respected, and that was the way he coached. So what do you think about so-and-so coach, who's a controversial, in-your-face coach? He said, Rusty, the game is not supposed to be about us. And wow. I always say, a lawsuit is not supposed to be about the lawyers. It's supposed to be about the people that are involved on both sides, and let a jury decide. And so I always try to remember, it ain't about me.
Right. I mean, you know, they say never meet your heroes, but it sounds like that one worked out for you.
Oh, that's a great point. You're always afraid you'll be disappointed.
Right.
So maybe you should keep your illusions. All he did was increase my respect. He was phenomenal.
Oh, I love that story. Why do you think that, you know, you've represented huge corporations, you've represented a bunch of different, you know, we all heard your intro from Alan. But what do you think it is about athletes in particular that they all seem to gravitate and want you in their corner?
Well, they don't. Oh, I mean,
Most of them, not all of them.
Why do you think they need you in their corner? Let's say that.
Yeah. I think a lot of it feeds on what happened with somebody else. If you're lucky enough to have a decent success with one person, then that leads to another. And I think that has a lot to do with it. But maybe it sort of filters down. I love sports. Mm-hmm. I'm like a wannabe athlete. I wasn't an athlete or a great athlete. My athletic career ended when I was a sophomore in high school, or maybe a freshman in high school, and I was sent into a football game to be a quarterback in a JV, and I went in with my helmet on backwards. Okay? And that, because I was so excited. So I don't have any illusions about my athletic history, but I do love sports. I do think they have the potential to bring out the best and the worst in people. And so maybe athletes sense when somebody really likes them for who they are, because they are just like anyone else. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be up front. And therefore they're judged differently, just like any people that are famous.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't have an explanation. I think that it's, athletes like everybody else, people who are in trouble, whether they are in civil trouble or criminal trouble, whether it's an allegation or whether it's a charge, they want somebody to be passionate about them. They want somebody that believes in them trying to help them.
Right.
And I think that's what's incumbent on a lawyer. You know, some people are guilty. Some people are liable. We do both civil and criminal. But a lot of times they're not either. And they want a lawyer that's willing to listen and assume that just because they're famous doesn't mean they're a screw-up.
Right.
And so...
Yeah. I was going to say, we have to take a quick break, but I think, tying in the respect part, obviously you have so much respect for these athletes that you're going to give them the best shot you can. And I think that's why they gravitate to you. On your website, you say we practice ethically, aggressively, and with passion. And what more is there to say? The fact that you say ethically first and then aggressively and with passion, I think says a lot about why people want you to represent them. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Rusty Harden, the Rusty Harden, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervey, and I'm here with Lauren Savon, and we are speaking to Rusty Harden, who is well-known and well-respected, an attorney in Texas, but I think known all across this country. And for so many reasons, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the cases that Rusty has been involved with. And I think, Rusty, we want to start off with the one that's in the news now, Deshaun Watson. Now, like you, I'm a big sports fan, and I think it helps when you represent some of these athletes, not because you get so impressed that they're an athlete, but just because you know a little bit more maybe about the sport than others do. Who may not be sports fans. And we know that Deshaun Watson has had an amazing career, and his career, I think, can get even better moving forward. And what you've done in this case is, in the media, all of these allegations have come out, mostly from the attorney representing about 21 accusers, Tony Busby. And you have made it clear that this is a legal issue, and you're going to focus on facts and evidence and names, and there doesn't seem to be any of that in this case. How frustrating is it for someone like Deshaun Watson to be accused of all this stuff without any facts being brought out that would create a case?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't really ever complain about the media because I think the perceptions are not the fault of the media. They are reporting what one of the people involved in the case, that the plaintiff's lawyer has said. Mm-hmm. And I don't quarrel with the media reporting what he says. At the end of the day, there are some cases, people are so prominent, and the social media has sort of changed the landscape so much. There's some stories you can't get out front of, that no matter how much you may object to what the other side's saying or whatever, everything moves so fast now.
Right.
That at the end of the day, the courtroom may be your only remedy. I represented a number of years Calvin Murphy with really bad allegations that later the jury found him not guilty of. And what I learned was there's all you can really do at these stages is try to move the needle back to the middle and wait for a court. And a courtroom, we're on a legal show. And the truth is there's some cases where the accused person's only remedy potentially is to have an advocate for them being able to cross-examine the accusers. And that never happens until you get into the courtroom. Well, when things move so fast now, the narrative may get frozen at the beginning. And there are a lot of misperceptions that stay basically unchallenged because what you'd have to do is go talk about all the facts of the case before you ever have a trial, before people have been questioned and so on. So I recognize, by the way, let me tell you something. I tell people this. So probably the first time I was interviewed, maybe go back to 1977. Since 77 to now, I have never been misquoted. Not once. Mm-hmm. And by the media. And indeed, I have been quoted saying some things I wish I hadn't said, but I did say them,
right.
And I didn't say them off the record. So I really don't get into a battle about the media and how they cover things. Here you have an advocate that's decided to his advantage to go out and say all this right, outrageous stuff and do it. At the end of the day, the public is not going to listen to me as a retained advocate for Deshaun. They're going to ultimately back up. If we can get everybody just to wait until there's a trial, until there's a forum, that's what we have to do. The problem is the accused person has to live through all this without really answering.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's built into the equation, and so we just have to learn to live with it.
Russ, you mentioned Calvin Murphy, of course, NBA Hall of Famer, accused of sexually abusing 5 of his 10 daughters. Now, you made the point to the jurors that the accusers were motivated by a dispute over money. And after a short deliberation, they found Murphy was not guilty. He was acquitted on all counts. And of course, he had become a broadcaster. He cried, he hugged you, he kissed you. He was very appreciative. But how do you look at that case and then think of this Deshaun Watson case? Because that was years ago. But when you talk about being motivated by money, isn't that what's going on here with the Deshaun Watson case, whether Tony Busby wants to talk about that or not? Even though, you had there was record of some emails about trying to shake, Watson down for money from accusers. Isn't that what's going on here? And isn't it going to be the same result as the Murphy case?
I think it is. And the big thing, yes, the answer to that's yes and yes. But I think what we need, Murphy's is a good example because the jury told me after the trial, 5 by then grown women were testifying. They weren't kids then, but they were talking about them when they were 6 to 13. The jury told me afterwards, we believed every one of these young women after direct. And after cross, we didn't believe anything they said.
Huh.
And the same thing happened in the Roger Clemens case, and they're both examples for the same reason. What changed people's mind is an advocate for the accused having the opportunity to challenge the accusations. And that only happens in the courtroom.
Right.
That's the frustrating thing. So this trial of Deshaun Watson, if it goes all the way through, that's not going to happen until sometime next year or later. In the meantime, there's nobody able to ask questions of these people publicly in such a way that allows the listener to make up their own mind. So So it is frustrating because many times the courtroom with the accused's own advocate is the only solution. But the problem with that is it takes a year and a half or 2 years to get there.
Well, what about depositions, Rusty?
Yeah, those will start in this case in September. I think we'll learn a good deal. However, deposition is no substitute for the public and a jury being able to watch the person themselves and see how they react and whether what they say makes sense. I feel real confident in the ultimate outcome, but the frustration that y'all are both pointing out is in the meantime.
Yeah, because in the meantime, you have all of this social media, you have this conversation going on outside of the courtroom, like you said. I'm sure you tell your client, don't get involved. You don't want to get involved. And yet, so many people in the public already make up their mind before it even gets to a courtroom.
Yeah, that's true. And it's built into the equation now in such a way that it's frustrating. I don't know a solution to it. For instance, right now, if somebody is charged with something or allegations made at 9 in the morning, in the old days, what we'd be trying to do is marshal a response by noon, by the morning the next day,
right,
or by the time the papers went to print, or the news was going to be the next day. Now it is TMZ or somebody's going to have it within 30 minutes,
yep,
and it'll be everywhere before you even knew the allegation or who they made it.
Right.
And who made it. So that's something I don't think any of us who represent people in the public have an answer for right now. I think what we have to do is avoid feeling sorry for ourselves and pouting and sulking or screaming and yelling and just keep telling people, just wait.
Right.
You know, you said something really important, and you said in the past, you've said that you do not take these allegations lightly. You made it clear that the allegations are serious and you don't take them lightly. However, in the same statement, you said, however, fairness to the accused is equally as important. In this Me Too environment, do you believe that fairness to the accused, as you say, being equally as important in the media, is given the same kind of respect as the allegations?
Well, that's a great question. If you hadn't said in the media, I would have said no, definitely not. I'm still reluctant to criticize the media about this, although they bear some responsibility in that they spend so much time trying to be fair to the accuser that there is this lag, mm-hmm, before they back up and start trying to do the same for the accused. Initially, the accuser gets all the coverage. The accused, unless they have an incredible public reputation that makes the average person reluctant to even listen to it, unless that's that person's status, you don't get equal time for the accused. I'm not sure how one deals with that. I think the problem, every time in this country we have, and I started out as an American history teacher and major before that, and so I have sort of a perspective about history. In this country, every time there is a hot social issue, we tend to deal with it in extremes.
Mm-hmm.
So you go family violence, the seriousness of it was a board. Once everybody grabs hold of what, how serious and a real issue it is, we go to the extreme, assuming everybody charged, every public figure did it. The same thing of abuse of women. There is no question it was underreported, prosecuted, and unfairly treated on behalf of the victim. So what I would hope is that we would have moved to the middle and wait and deal with each case individually. What we have done is said the allegation right now seems to be the solution, and it's not. You can say that 85% of people that are accused of a particular crime are guilty. That's 15% or 10%, whatever it is, that are not. We don't allow for that 15 or 10 or however whatever the percentages are. I would hope the women's movement ultimately will back up and say, no matter how badly this problem is, no matter how many Weinsteins they are in the world, there are still going to be people out there that are accused who did not do it. And sure, we have to be willing to back up and judge cases individually. If we judge them only on the allegation, the accused is always dead in the water. And we got to move away from that.
But don't you think that, you know, as you mentioned, the pendulum will swing too far in one direction and then will come back to center eventually? I mean, you know, as one of the women who spoke out against Weinstein, I can tell you that all of our stories, for the most part, were vetted pretty heavily in the media. They wanted to make sure that we were where we said we were. They called, you know, friends at the time or family members at the time that were with us or knew about it. But, you know, until he had his day in court, it was really not for anyone to say whether he should have a career again. Whereas now, I do see some careers being destroyed on social media. We're not even talking about mainstream media, but before an accuser even has the right to stand up for themselves, sometimes they don't even get to a courtroom. So I'm hoping that as you say, that pendulum will find its center.
I totally agree with everything you just said, and I think it will. The problem is the people that get caught in the space there before that happens, mm-hmm. all right? Mm-hmm. And you're right. The reason I always was so hanky at the beginning before I decided what we believed about Deshaun Watson is because I was a prosecutor for 15 years.
Sure.
I was really active with women's groups about violence against women and all. And I meant what y'all said earlier about it is a huge problem and something that we need to encourage people to go forward to law enforcement and others and feel willing to confront and to report, et cetera. But it doesn't mean that everybody, I will tell you, for instance, Deshaun Watson is every bit as a nicer person as his reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the end of the day, his salvation will be the system. But as we talked earlier, the system works slowly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's to his disadvantage.
Right.
On the other hand, that guy will lead somebody to the Super Bowl one day.
Okay.
And what he does, whatever community he's in, will be incredibly proud. I'll tell you what, I got a letter. This is real quickly. I know you got to go to commercial.
Yeah, we do.
I get an email from a woman who describes herself in Gainesville, Georgia, as a white, 57-year-old white redneck woman. Who said, I've been watching this guy since he was a safety patrol guy in the fifth grade, and I will tell you that is the nicest young man I have ever seen in my life. I watched him help kids get out of their car, walk around traffic, the younger ones, et cetera. We loved him in this town of Gainesville, Georgia, and that's who he is as a person.
Mm.
And I think at the end of the day, that'll win out. It will just take time.
Yeah,
sure.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, I do want to talk about the NFL season starting soon, and I want to get your view, Rusty, on what's going to happen from the NFL perspective, because all the points you're making are excellent points. But then there's the NFL. What will they do? Stay tuned to Gervie's Law. You want to hear Rusty's answer after the break. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yes, we're back. We're having a fascinating conversation with Rusty Harden. And we were talking before the break about Deshaun Watson. And we don't want to spend the rest of the hour talking about Deshaun Watson, Rusty. But I do want to ask you an important question. You know, obviously you represent him and you know him and you've said that he's as great a guy as everyone perceived him to be. The question becomes the NFL. What does the NFL do under these circumstances now that the season's about to start?
Yeah, there's like several dynamics going on here. The NFL has had a policy and an agreement with the union over the years, at least certainly the most recent years, that if there is a criminal investigation going on with an NFL player, they will try to stay to the sidelines until the criminal investigation and interviews are done and the criminal case is, so that they will not get in the way of the criminal investigation, where they want to interview the player, they want to interview people, but they're also exposed to interviews, in particular, potentially a prosecution. So I don't really have any quarrel with what the NFL has done so far. I think there's a misunderstanding, people wanting them to go do this or that. Really? I mean, come on. If there's a criminal, finally, none of these women made any law enforcement complaints. When I kept freaking at them about, listen, you know, if you folks really believe these, you need to be reporting them to the police,
right?
Because it's important that people be prosecuted who do what you said. And I really wanted, that meant that law enforcement, responsible law enforcement, would then interview everybody. And I believed only Deshaun would gain from a total interview of everybody that was making allegations and had the evidence. Ultimately, some of them did. 8 of the 22 have filed a criminal complaint. All right, so now there's a criminal investigation going by the Houston Police and the District Attorney's Office. The NFL's position historically, if you go back to Adrian Peterson, Michael Bennett, a couple of people you mentioned, is to wait until the criminal investigation is completed so that they don't interfere with fairness to both sides and get in the way of a criminal investigation. That's what they're doing now. They're gathering information, but they are not seeking to interview Deshaun. They're not seeking to get documents from Deshaun, but they will. Once the criminal investigation is completed, then they will go after it full bore. And the public at large ought to be aware. The NFL, it does, in fact, take these kind of allegations incredibly seriously, and they're not going to let this thing lie down. And, of course, because there's so much publicity, that makes it even more certain they will. But they are, I believe, doing the very responsible thing. Let the criminal process work its way through, and then we will do our total own investigation. And I tell you, I've been involved in the investigation they do with other people, and they are very, very, very thorough. The people they have doing it are former prosecutors in the criminal system, former FBI agents in the criminal system. But I think they're following the normal route. Now, what happens in the football season?
Right.
That's up to them. I can't answer that.
Now, how Adrian Peterson, you know, I'm a huge Minnesota Vikings fan. I remember when he was sitting out while all of this was going on. It was for a considerable period of time. And for those of us who, you know, wanted to see Adrian Peterson play, even though obviously the allegations were serious, this could happen to Deshaun Watson, too. He may be sitting out for weeks.
Well, that's right. And I'm not involved in the football part of it. His agents are, and the people handling his football business are. So I can't speak knowledgeably about that. I'm not really involved in it. The NFL will have some decisions to make as the season goes on, depending on what happens between the two teams. I will say this. There are a number of NFL teams that will welcome Deshaun as part of their team. The issue is whether or not if and when there's going to be a trade and under what circumstances and when the Texans want to do, you know, to accede to that and do it. I think the NFL will have some decisions to make in the fall. I just don't want to prejudge what they're going to do. I do know that if anybody thinks they're going to sweep it under the rug, they're just totally wrong. They're going to look at this thing incredibly thoroughly. That's why I always wanted a real thorough police investigation first, because I thought that that would be helpful in everybody getting comfortable with what happened.
Well, the confidence that you've shown in your client is very impressive. I watched the press conference that you gave, and it was very convincing. So it's important that there's a balance. When you have someone like Tony Busby speaking in the media, it's important that you have an attorney who balances out. I know Gloria Allred has said on our show a number of times she speaks out in the media because her clients can't. So that is something that it's important. I want to switch gears really quickly because we will keep our eyes on what happens with Deshaun as the season gets going. Let's talk a little bit about a local interest issue, Tyler Skaggs and the wrongful death lawsuits that were brought by the family and how that has gone.
Well, it just started. We just filed the lawsuits. We would have preferred to wait to make that decision until, for a number of other months. There's a trial scheduled right now against Eric Kay in Fort Worth, Texas, who is accused of having provided the pills that ultimately led to Tyler's death. But the statute of limitations was going to run on July 1, and the trial had not occurred yet. It's currently scheduled for August, and so we really had no choice but to go on and file now and then start proceeding. At the very beginning, I don't think if I I've always said if I was a judge, I wouldn't want to be reading and hearing for the first time what lawyers said about their case after they filed it in the media. I don't really want to be talking one way or the other about the facts of it. Obviously, we believe in what we filed. The angels disagree with us. They have a different view. And once again, that hallowed world that I believe in so much, the courtroom will make the decision. But it's just getting started. And I think that, and the lawsuits, for your listeners to know, in California, for a wrongful death, only the spouse has a cause of action. And so what was filed in L.A. was the lawsuit on behalf of Tyler's wife. In Texas, the wife and the parents have a cause of action. And so in Texas, there is we filed on behalf of the parents. So Carly, the wife, has a lawsuit in California, and the parents have a lawsuit in Texas. That's why it's in two different jurisdictions.
Do you think that it will cause concern for other teams with the way that they handle some of their players in terms of medications and the way that they treat injured athletes? Is this going to have a ripple effect throughout the league in Major League Baseball and possibly other leagues?
I don't know whether the case will. That depends on other people's reaction. I think the issue will. You notice there was just a massive settlement announced of $26 billion with the companies, both the distributors and the manufacturer of opiates. It is a problem raging through our society. I think it's only common sense that law enforcement is looking at it as applies to baseball, similar to the way they did to steroids and HGH 10 years ago. And so, or 20 years ago, really, is when it began. Baseball started testing for HGH and steroids 2003, I think. We're 18 years past that. Mm-hmm. I think that, and there's no question, law enforcement has made clear, they're looking at this issue as it applies to baseball as well. I suspect it will work its way into other sports. I think it's... Anytime we have an issue raging through society, it's only common sense that it's going to also reflect in the sports world.
Right.
It's a microcosm of the country. So I think, yes, I think opioids are, I know, the whole issue is being very closely looked at in baseball. I don't have any personal knowledge of other sports, but I would think it only makes sense there. These things originally began to be used so often because of their help with pain and injury.
Right.
And so that really would apply to all sports.
Yeah. We got to take another quick break, our last break of the hour. We're talking to Rusty Harden. I'm Alan Gervey.
I'm Lauren Savon.
And we'll be right back. Yeah, there's a lot of memories back in September and before. You know, speaking of memories, I was listening to news today and heard this motion for a mistrial in the Robert Durst case. Mm-hmm. Dick DeGaren, who's been on our show a couple times, and he's talked extensively about the Durst case. And the motion was based on declining health of Robert Durst. And I know Dick DeGaren has been heavily involved. Now, you must go way back with Dick DeGaren, Rusty Harden, being two of the predominant Texas attorneys.
Well, yeah, we've known each other a long time. I was in the DA's office as a prosecutor for a long time when Dick was defending. We actually are on the same side of a case right now that nothing has happened with so far, but we're on the same side. Yes, so we've known each other a long time.
Tell me.
Well, he's a very good lawyer.
Yeah, now tell me quickly, because we want to get on to a couple more of your cases, but with this news, have you ever faced that? And what are the chances that something like this would actually be deemed a mistrial? Because a lot of people will be against it, saying, hey, what does that have to do with the substance of the allegations?
Well, you know, I said a long time ago, if I ever came back in a second life, it was going to be to run over with or kneecap every talking head who had an opinion about lawyers who came on TV and had an opinion about somebody else's case. So, if you haven't walked in their shoes, you don't know. So I don't know the condition of Durst. I do know Dick, obviously. I respect him a lot as a great lawyer. I don't know the merits one way or the other. I've not had one in which I've said, well, we need to have this case dismissed because my client is failing, but there may be a legitimate basis for it or not. I'd have to take that position as I'm not there. I don't know. But Dick has certainly fought a long, valiant series of battles on behalf of his client in that case. But I don't want to venture as to whether or not good or bad or whatever the deal is. Every time I had a case that somebody that was talking about it was mine. I was amazed at sometimes how uninformed they were. So I don't want to join that club.
Well, Rusty, I have to tell you, you and Durst are actually the same age, I believe. He is in ailing health, and you are still on top of the world, still working full-time, it sounds like. You have not slowed down at all. We were just talking during the break, me and Alan were mentioning, would it ever be possible even for you to retire, or is this what you do?
No, that's a great question. Great question, Mark. So the deal I have with the members of my firm is I'm going to do this until I either start embarrassing them or myself. And their job is to come tell me I'm doing one or the other. And, you know, before Google arrived, I would avoid in interviews telling people my age.
Sure. We all do.
And, by the way, we haven't said what your age is. We've just said you're an experienced trial attorney.
That's right.
Right. I consider you both great Americans, so I'll bring you up. But the deal is I tell people, so I would say, no, that's my feminine side. I don't have to tell you my age. The reporter would respect it. About an hour later, they'd call back and said, my editor says, if you're not going on the record, say what your age is, we'll just Google your ass, and that'll take care of the whole thing.
That's right.
And so Google is, if those of us who want to remain anonymous about certain parts of our life, Google is a tremendous enemy.
And you don't even have to Google. Let me just say it. It's Rusty Hardin, HARDIN.com. Go to Rusty Hardin. It's an excellent website, RustyHardin.com. You can learn so much about Rusty. And one of the things that you will learn is that Rusty really, really gives the props to his lawyers, his staff, and he is of the mind that it takes a village. And if you watch some of the videos on RustyHardin.com, you will see that he does not take all the credit, says he could never do this without his supporting cast. And my hat's off to you for acknowledging everyone who helps out in tough cases like you handle.
I think I am nothing without the people around me. And the truth is, I'm simply a mouthpiece in many ways for the stuff they put together. I told somebody when a judge told another person that in a trial I was organized, I died laughing. Nobody accuses me of being in real life real organized. That was a contribution and a compliment to the people around me. No, you're absolutely right. I'd go anywhere with these lawyers that I'm lucky enough to practice with, and they vary from 29 to 55, and I'm hugely proud of them, and I would be nothing without them. So I'm glad you noticed that, because I really believe in it.
Well, it's great to have a good team on your side. Rusty, what do you do for fun when you're not...
And we only have a minute, so you have to tell us.
To give us something.
No. It's pretty limited.
Okay.
It's family, reading, and work, and exercise. And the reading is all what I call beach reading, nothing of real significance. I'd love to be one of these politicians that has three very meaningful books on their bedstand. They look at it, but it's not true. I read them.
They're all reading very meaningful
books. Wait a second. They're probably lying about Rusty, because they're politicians.
Rusty has supermarket novels on his bedside.
I'm getting back to the ethically. On his website, it says ethical. He's being honest. He's not saying that he's reading.
I love it. That's what I wanted, Rusty.
We have had such a joy for the last hour. Speaking with you, Rusty, we really appreciate.
It's been an honor.
There's been so much erudite, opinions and your perspectives are so important for people to listen to, because you can be successful and still be a good guy. So we want to thank you for that, and thank you for being with us today on Gervais.
Well, I enjoyed talking to both of you. Y'all have a good weekend.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Same to you. We appreciate it. Well,
all right.
That's gonna do it for another.
What a great show that was. I learned so much. I could listen to him speak all day.
Don't you feel like you just want to ask him questions?
Oh, that's what I said. All day.
I mean, the answers that he comes up with are so important. And,
yes.
You know, I hope someday my kids can listen. You know, they're a little young now, but they can listen to some of these shows and hear people like Rusty Hardin.
Absolutely.
And a couple of weeks ago, Bob Cohn,
right.
The divorce attorney who represents Melinda Gates
right.
and Donald Trump's
We've had
former
some incredible
wives.
People on this show.
They have so much wisdom.
Yes.
Hudson and Harper, listen to these shows
when you're
old enough to understand.
They absolutely will.
Because the wisdom is just amazing. I want to thank everyone for listening. Visit us at on Facebook, gervaislaw.com, and we'll be back with another fascinating show next week. Thanks, Lauren.